Hello, friends. It's a cold open to today's show. I just wanted to take a second before we get to today's episode with Louis Zatzman of Raptors Republic, and now 538, baby. I wanted to take a quick second to talk about Kyle Lowry. We somehow did nearly 40 minutes of podcast without really talking about Kyle Lowry, and last night he hit 10,000 career points with your Toronto Raptors, and I just wanted to take a second to appreciate and reiterate the need to appreciate every second of Kyle Lowry for the remainder of this season. We don't know what the future holds, so we don't know if this is his last season. We don't know if he's going to be dealt mid-season if things continue on at their current trajectory. And I just implore you all to enjoy the hell out of Kyle Lowry. Don't worry about the, oh, he's had a couple bad games. Is he losing it? Whatever it might be. The dude's not losing it. He had 11 straight points on his own in the fourth quarter against the Bucks last night after a bit of a rough start. He's Kyle freaking Lowry, and every time he hits a milestone, it's worth kind of sitting back and reflecting and appreciating exactly how rad that dude is. And so that's all I wanted to do. It felt weird to not mention Kyle Lowry on the day that he hit 10,000 career points with the team, and we just talked about other stuff on today's podcast, which is fine. There was a lot of stuff to get into, but appreciate Kyle Lowry and enjoy whatever remaining games he has with the team. Maybe he sticks around beyond this year. That would be pretty cool. I would like to see him chase down DeMar DeRozan for the number one all-time scoring title for the Raptors. Maybe he does that, maybe he doesn't. But either way, bask in the glow of his season that's going on right now, because he still remains the best player on the Raptors this deep into his career. It's incredible. And shouts to Kyle, and congrats to Kyle on a milestone that I don't think he cares about much, as he talked about last night in the post game, which is awesome as well. Extremely Kyle stuff. Anyway, let's get to today's show. Myself and Louis Zatzman talking about the Bucks game.
Oh, like, because when I shot, I expected to make it. So, like, I don't shoot kind of miss.
You are Locked On Raptors, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team every day.
Hey, what's going on? Welcome to episode number 873 of Locked On Raptors for Thursday, January the 28th. I'm your host, Sean Woodley of RaptorsHQ.com. You can find me on Twitter, as always, at WoodleySean, and you can find the show at Locked On Raptors, where you can find links to every episode of the podcast as well. Please make sure you're finding the podcast on all of your favorite podcast providers. It's very much appreciated when you go and support and take the 2 seconds it takes to leave some nice words and make us feel good and stroke my ego. Also, just a reminder, we have a new show at Locked On called Locked On Today that you should go check out with Peter Bukowski. He's the host of our Locked On Packers podcast, running through all of the biggest stories from the sports world every single morning. Just a perfect little 20-minute download of the things you need to know. On Wednesday's episode, the host of Locked On Blue Jays, AJ Andrews, made a little appearance to talk about the Marcus Simeon signing. You can go listen to Locked On Today there, and also go listen to Locked On Blue Jays for AJ's full thoughts on the next great baseball player the Blue Jays have signed, which is very fun and cool. All right, on today's show, less fun and cool, the Raptors lost another game, their second loss in a row, this time to the Milwaukee Bucks, 115-108 on Wednesday night in Tampa Bay. You know, we'll get into it on today's show. We're going to dive into, you know, the offense kind of sputtering in certain parts of the game, despite not having the worst performance ever, but we'll talk about that. We're going to get into the performances of Pascal Siakam and the reaction to the loss, which was seemingly far more intense than it needed to be. I don't feel that bad about this game. Some people did. We'll get into it, and we'll get into it with our guest today, who is now a very famous writer, who I'm glad is punching down and joining the podcast after making his debut at 538 to talk about how bad the Raptors are on their drives, and we're going to talk about that in the final segment of the show. It is our pal from Raptors Republic, and now 538, Louis Zatzman. What's going on, buddy?
Hey, man, just living the high. It turns out when you get a good byline, the government just sends you like 60 grand and like a mail order bride. And so I'm living the high life now. Things are good.
Yeah, I wouldn't know anything about that. Bylines? No. writing? I'm not upset that I've fallen off of that at all. So, Lewis, welcome to the show, buddy. The Milwaukee Bucks, they're good, as it turns out. Even though the Raptors, I thought, gave them some trouble. They defended them quite well, I thought. Even though Giannis, you look up, he had 24, 18, and 9. He, you know, I thought he was kind of harassed by the Raptors for most of this game. Drew Holiday did his best Eric Bledsoe impression, going 3 of 14. Good to see that for old time's sake. You know, I don't think the Bucks played a terribly good game. I thought the Raptors played it actually a pretty good game, for all things told, despite the disappointing finish and the lack of ability to kind of push it over the finish line. Lewis, what was your biggest takeaway from the Raptors' 115-108 loss to the Bucks?
Honestly, very similar to what you said. A moral victory, really. And I know that listeners and readers are tired of that because we've had a lot of moral victories, but a moral victory all the same. You know, the Bucks are one of the best four teams in the league and honestly, just a clear cut above the Raptors. The Raptors are not as good as they were last year. And even last year, the Bucks were a cut above them in the regular season. The Bucks are just an unbelievable team. And so, yeah, when you play them, you need so many things to go right. And I'm sure we'll get into the details of what you need to go right as we go through the show. But really, there's a checklist of like four or five things, and the Raptors missed on one or two of them, and that's enough to lose.
Yeah, totally. You know, you mentioned the moral victories thing, and I did a little video for Locked On last night kind of talking about this. And I understand that it's probably quite exhausting to constantly be saying, oh, well, that was kind of a moral victory. But two things can be true. You can be tired of moral victories, but they can also continue to pick up moral victories, right? Like, you know, they're 7-11. We've talked all about how their point differential suggests they're a much better team, how they've had some coin flip games that, you know, a ball doesn't spill out of the hoop for Pascal Siakam once or twice. And we're talking about a team that is, you know, probably fifth or sixth in the Eastern Conference at this point. And it's been weird. They've been snake bitten. They have not closed games well. And that's not all to say it's all like bad luck or juju. Like, obviously, they're doing things in these games to lose them as well. Most notably, their offense just has these dry spells that are just absolute killers. But I thought this was a well-played game from the Raptors. I thought they had a good game plan defensively. I thought they did a great job, like I said, on Giannis. They forced him into five turnovers in this one. They were comfortable living with like Brook Lopez killing them, which has done well for them in the past. And it just happened that they couldn't quite keep up on the offensive end in this one. Their two-point shooting, as we're going to get into as we talk about your piece, has been not very good. But for the most part, I thought this was a well-played game. The idea of moral victories, Lewis, I'm curious, like, when do you think it will run dry for you? And when will you think, okay, moral victories don't matter anymore and they just need to actually pick up, you know, real tangible victories? You know, is there like an event horizon for you when it comes to the record where moral victories stop existing to you? Or is it just sort of a play it by ear? We'll see, and you'll kind of know when you know.
No, I agree. I wrote this actually because I wrote, you know, the moral victory piece after last game. Their next nine games, they play two good teams. They play the Brooklyn Nets, and whether they're even a good team right now is a stretch. And then they also play the Boston Celtics until the middle of February. So February 15th, they play Milwaukee again. Then the 18th, they have the second of the back-to-back against Milwaukee. So those two games to me against Milwaukee are the event horizon. If by that time they don't have a good record, if they're not winning games, then I'm worrying. But for now, they just came off a stretch of rough games. I'll give them nine more.
Yeah, I think that's fair. It gets you to the 27-game mark, which is about I guess it's over a third. The math of this season is not working the way it typically would for me in the brain. I need to recalibrate my 82-game math to 72. But, I said last night, and I kind of maintain this, and I guess it really depends on at what point of the season this takes place, but if the Raptors ever fall like six games out of sixth place and are still sort of on the fringes of the play-in tournament, then yeah, I think it's fair to say, okay, this might be too big a hole to dig out of. But the rest of the Eastern Conference is just kind of spinning its wheels at the moment. There's still only a couple of games out of sixth right now, maybe three now after last night. But you know, it's not like they're in some sort of dire straits. They play the Kings on Friday. They play the Magic on Sunday. Both teams have been nightmares. They played last night in a sadness bowl that I can't imagine anyone would have wanted to watch. And like, if they take care of business in those games, which, you know, I guess it's a stretch to say they will definitely take care of business, but the last few opportunities they've had to, they have. You know, they'll go into the 20-game mark at 9-11, which would mean they'd gone 7-3 in their previous 10 games and really kind of turned things around from the 10-game mark where we did a check-in and we were like, okay, if, you know, they can't turn this around in the next 10 games, there might be a problem. Well, guess what? They've turned it around for the most part. Even if they lose one of the games against the Kings or the Magic, at 8-12, I think you're totally still in a position where you can chase whatever teams in front of you down, especially considering those teams are not exactly a murderer's row of like juggernauts or anything like that. And so, yeah, you know, I think if you do get to that 9-game point, if you get to the 27-game mark and you're at, you know, 10-17, something along those lines, then yeah, you're probably sitting there pretty concerned, you know, considering most of those losses would have come against bad teams. I just don't think we're going to see that. I would bet by the time we get to that 9-game mark, they're probably above 500 again, considering the strength of schedule coming up. So that might be an optimistic view. And, you know, congratulations for coming to this podcast to get anything but and being disappointed. You should have known. But I just, the moral victories have not run dry for me yet. And I made this analogy last night, but it really just feels like, you know, when you're like out on like a hike or something, and you come to maybe like a muddy, slippery hill, and you do everything right to try to climb the hill. You're slow, you're methodical, but sometimes you're just going to slip on like an uneven piece of mud and you're going to lose some ground. Eventually, you're going to get to the top of that hill and you're going to cruise and you're going to be like, wow, everything's so easy now. Kind of feels like that team, that's what the team is right now. Do you agree that they're kind of just like spinning their wheels? They're doing the things right and just aren't getting the breaks, but eventually things will break right and they'll be able to kind of lock it into cruise control?
No, that's a great metaphor. And I mean, if you're chasing someone, if you're climbing that hill and someone is getting further and further away from you, then it feels even more desperate, right? Because the thing about the Raptors is they don't exist in a vacuum. There's all these other teams that are winning games that they have to, you know, catch up to. So it feels even more dire. But no, I completely agree. They are going up the hill. Like all the numbers, you know, watching the games, just everything about the Raptors is they are getting higher and higher on the hill.
Totally. I want to get into some of the specifics from this game and some things that went wrong, some things that went right in just a second. But first, I want to tell everybody about our friends over at betonline.ag, the number one place that you should be putting your money down when you are betting on sports. They are a wonderful place for you to sign up, and it's a free account you get as well, and you can bet to your heart's content. Go to betonline.ag right now, sign up for a free account, use the promo code LOCKEDON for a 50% welcome bonus. And again, there's a million things you can bet on. You can bet on the Super Bowl. They just released like a whole, I don't know, like a catalog of bets you can make for the Super Bowl, prop bets, things like that. That's always a ton of fun. Of course, you can throw some money down on the nightly NBA or NHL action. You've got MLB futures. Throw some money down on your beloved Toronto Blue Jays because they're going to kick ass this year. Go throw some money there. There's, again, no shortage of things for you to try and throw your money on, including like Croatian basketball, if you so please. Don't sit on the sidelines anymore. Get in on the action, and don't forget to use the promo code LOCKEDON to receive a 50% welcome bonus with your first deposit. Bet online, your online sportsbook experts. Before we continue on talking about the Raptors-Bucks game, just a reminder, you can check out Locked On Bets with your boy Q and Lee Sterling of Paramount Sports. Tune in there every single day as they're giving you a 15-minute bite-sized, another sort of download-type podcast where they're giving you all the information as you line up your action for the night's sporting lineup. That's sure. You can tell I don't gamble. I don't know the lingo, but either way, go and listen to Locked On Bets if you do gamble, because your boy Q and Lee Sterling are going to win you some money. All right, Lewis, let's kind of dig into the good and the bad of the Raptors-Bucks game last night. Let's start with bad. We'll close the segment out on high notes, but we should probably talk about Pascal Siakam, who I thought in this game, you know, it's continued a bit of a stretch where I think he's played smartly. I think he's played well enough. I think he's been good and deferential when he's needed to be. I think teams are really selling out to stop him, and he's doing a good job of not forcing it. And in particular, I mean, it would be great if he could break down Giannis Antetokounmpo off the dribble and cook his ass and score around him, but he can't. And so instead of driving into oblivion and probably turning it over a whole bunch, as we kind of saw in the first part of this game where he was getting poked away by the long arms of Giannis pretty much at every turn, he instead decided to defer and was less of an active participant in the offense and kind of left it over to the guards to run things. I don't know. Where are you at with Siakam's performance right now? Obviously, it's his first game back after missing a couple of games with a groin thing. We don't know how healed it is. We don't know if he's at 100%, whatever it might be. Where are you at with the way he's playing? Are you concerned that the very positive stretch we saw for a few games there is maybe a little bit too far in the rear view, and maybe he is what we saw at the start of the season? Or are there elements of his game that are kind of hinting towards progress, even though maybe the numbers aren't quite matching up?
So I think the way the Raptors are using him has changed. During the bubble and then into this season, the Raptors were just giving him the ball and saying, run the offense, do good stuff. You know, beat your guy and either finish or create for someone else. And it just wasn't working. I mean, he either couldn't beat his guy or he wasn't finishing. He wasn't reacting. Actually, that was always true. He was reacting well when help came, passing quite well. But the scoring for himself just wasn't there. And so around the Boston game, they shifted and said, okay, you're just going to be a guy in the offense now. Kyle and Fred will run the offense. You're going to just slot in, you know, stand in the corner, set some screens, roll, cut, run in transition, you know, attack the offensive glass. If you want the ball now, go get it. And if he has started playing well within that role, then he's been shifted more of the responsibility. And so you saw, you know, against the Suns and the Warriors, he got hot in the middle of the game and sort of shifted some shots his way, ended up, you know, playing really, really well. But if he doesn't get hot, he's just not really going to get the ball more than anyone else. And so in this one, he only had 12 shots, and it just never seemed like it was time for Siakam to just break a guy off the dribble. I mean, he had four offensive rebounds, which led the team, actually was 40% of their total, most of anyone in the game, and only had 12 shots. That tells you that right now he's just another guy. So I'm not super disappointed. I would like to see him, you know, get a little more hot, because he is having others create for him, right? That's part of being a guy, is you let your point guards create for you. But still not really clicking. As you said, though, you're playing the Bucks. So, you know, Brook Lopez is going to sit at the rim the entire game. He has 2 7-footers to beat, one as the primary and the other as help. That's an impossible task. So it makes sense that Toronto's centers threw up 12 threes between the two of them, because Brook Lopez is at the rim. That's sort of the way to counter them. Or you can pivot into a handoff from the center or whatever, like Lowry was doing. But the fact of the matter is, Siakam, as you said, just didn't have the room for it, didn't have space. And to his credit, to Toronto's credit, he never commandeered the offense to say, I'm just going to make it happen.
Yeah, which I think we saw in the postseason was kind of the problem, right? Like, he was just like, I am going to score this post-up against Jaylen Brown. I'm going to do it. And he would never do it, even in his defiance. And so I think it's a lot healthier the way he's being a participant in the offense this year. Obviously, it would be nice if your max player could score his, you know, customary 23 a game or whatever, especially considering this is a team, as we're going to talk about, that struggles to score in a lot of different ways, in particular around the rim. And Siakam, at his best, is very good at that. Obviously, he's had some struggles the last year or so, and, you know, we don't really know, I guess, where things are going to even out. But it's again, I'm kind of torn on it, right? Where I think he's playing a smarter game, but also I kind of wish he would play a dumber game sometimes and just like kind of force the issue once in a while. It's kind of like he's completely eradicated the forcing of the issue, which sometimes you need. And so I'd like to see maybe that come around a little bit, and maybe he will do that against teams that don't have Giannis in his grill the whole time. And also, you know, Jrue Holiday, who's really, really good guarding up on post-ups and things like that. Yeah, I'm still optimistic about Siakam. I still think what we saw over that 6 or 7 game stretch earlier this year is probably closer to what he will be eventually, but they're also not doing a ton of favors to him in terms of getting the ball in great spots, right? I mean, the whole crunch time offense just kind of forgets about him, and that was not the case last year. They were the best crunch time team or the second best crunch time team in the league, and a lot of it was because they really focused on that Siakam pick and roll or having people screen for Siakam and kind of working out of that because it was a really effective play, and that just does not seem to be a thing they're going to as much this year. Maybe it's a lack of confidence. Maybe it's the Chris Finch offense kind of becoming more egalitarian. I don't know, but he's going to have to, if the Raptors have designs on doing more than just making a nice playoff spot and getting beaten in the first round, there will have to be some sort of growth from Siakam and, you know, a realizing of his offensive talents and their importance to kind of keeping the machine humming at the best possible clip it can. Did you have any other sort of glaring bad stuff from this game? Let's talk about Aaron Baines. So he shot 1 of 7 from 3 in this game. People were very mad about that. Of course, I didn't think it was a bad Baines game, honestly. You know, he missed the shots clearly, but I thought, first of all, I would much rather have him standing outside and missing threes than I would rather have him like under the basket clogging things up for Siakam and the rest of the people trying to get to the rim, because that's just not worked. And I'm glad he's becoming a little bit more emboldened with his threes, because it creates more space, obviously, even if it's an ugly-ass jumper, one of the most broke-ass jumpers I've ever seen. But it's still, for the health of the offense, I think it's better for him to be standing out there. And I also don't think it's a coincidence that the Raptors' defense was at its best when he was on the floor. He was kind of the perfect backstop for the team in this game. He had 3 blocks. I think he's kind of understanding what his role in the defense finally is after kind of being, not kind of being, like, was completely out of sorts to start the season. What did you think of the way Baines played? Did you think he was as bad as the internet suggested he was as he was kind of bricking those threes? How are you feeling kind of about the Baines experience as a whole now that he's kind of falling back into form a little bit?
No, I'm with you. I thought Baines had an excellent game. He didn't play smart to start the game. Like, the Bucks want him taking those threes.
Right.
And the Raptors don't. And he was taking the threes. So that tells you who is winning. You know, the meta game, if you will. At the same time, I mean, other than 3-point shooting, he was phenomenal. Like, defensively, he was doing the Marc Gasol thing where he was plugging the gaps and allowing everyone to run around in front of him. He had a couple plays where, you know, he rotated from sort of the high paint down to the baseline, walled off a drive, you know, took massive contact and didn't move an inch. That's what you need from your center. That was awesome. And he also shot 4 of 5 from inside the arc. He and Fred VanVleet are developing a really nice pick and roll partnership, which, I mean, we all expected they would to start the year. He creates a lot of space for guys on his screens. Fred uses those to hit pull-up threes. Aaron Baines uses it to rumble to the rim. He had 2 pick and roll dunks that Fred had really nice sort of bounce passes into his basket for them. So yeah, really nice game in several different areas. 3-point shooting was A, inaccurate, and B, unintelligent. But other than that, fantastic.
Yeah, I'm encouraged by his progress. Like you said, it'd be cool if they could turn a few of those threes that he's chucking up into like dribble handoff stuff and sort of keep the offense flowing.
Which they did in the fourth quarter, which is how they fought back into the game.
Totally. But, you know, again, I would much rather him out there putting up threes. Like, the whole thing about Baines was he's an eager 3-point shooter, even more so than Serge was, right? Like the per 36 like 3 attempts were through the roof last season for him. And you need that. I don't think he's going to go 1 of 7 all the time. As ugly as his jumper is, he's, you know, an average-ish shooter, it seems. And you'll get more out of those wide-open threes most nights. You know, obviously, it would have been nice to have them in this game in particular. But you didn't, and that's fine. I'm glad of the progress with Baines, and now they've kind of crept up from having 0 good minutes of center production to, you know, 30 or so. Obviously, Boucher, his mileage is varying right now, and he's in a bit of a slide, but I thought he offered some good little breaths of offense last night too, and I'm feeling less dire, but also I'm still very much okay if they want to go trade for a center. That would be quite pleasing to me. Let's quickly, before we get into the final segment, we'll talk about this guy's offense in the final segment, but his defense in this game, Fred VanVleet's defense, that is, was something I think worth remarking upon. Obviously not a great offensive game, 3 of 17, 2 of 11 from 3. He missed some wide-open threes that if he makes a couple of those wide-open threes, they probably win this game. But I thought Fred probably had his best defensive game ever, non-finals division. He was insane. They credited him with 3 blocks somehow. He also had 4 steals. Was really, really harassing Giannis and Middleton and Holiday. Felt like he was stripping it out, you know, every time he got a chance. And there were a lot of loose balls that he poked free that didn't end up being credited as Fred VanVleet steals that probably should have been because he did all the dirty work. What did you think of Fred's defense in this game and his, I think, developing case for all defense?
Yeah, I mean, I've been on Fred VanVleet being an elite defender for a long time. But look, it's not unrelated that VanVleet wreaks all this havoc in the same game that Aaron Baines has his best defensive game.
Right.
Like, for Fred to be so good, for Fred to cause all of this mania, tipping balls away, switching, you know, communicating. At one point, I saw him at the top of a 1-2-2 zone, literally with his back to the ball. He was facing the rim, barking out instructions to the other 4 guys. Like, this dude is a quarterback. I don't care how small he is. I don't care what position he plays. That is a defensive quarterback. And he can do all that because someone is plugging the gap behind him, because someone is rotating and taking away those drives. And so, you know, Milwaukee is an unbelievable team, right? Like, they found counters. So Fred VanVleet was doing such a good job mucking up primary drives. They would reverse it, swing, looking for shots. Toronto took the shots away. Milwaukee countered by driving, you know, sort of short-circuiting those ping, ping, ping perimeter passes. Brook Lopez did it a couple times. He just created off the dribble. I mean, that is what they needed to do, and they ended up doing it. Lopez shot 8 of 11 from the field. But Fred forced them into such sort of bizarre offensive actions and decisions. He annihilates what people want to do. He is that type of defender, like a young Kawhi Leonard, where you want something, nope, can't do it. And Fred is just so strong. He has his body in the right place. He gets his hands on every ball. I agree with you, man. That was a unbelievable defensive performance.
Yeah, you know, the Bucks, I think, would stand to benefit if they played the Raptors every game, because Fred VanVleet forces them into doing different things than they typically like to do. And of course, we know what the problem with the Bucks is they think, we've done this all season and it's been great. Let's keep on doing the exact same thing in the playoffs. Maybe Fred VanVleet is the agent to force Mike Budenholzer to change. But of course, that's not going to be the case. They're not going to get to play them every game. And I'm glad for it, because they're annoying as hell to play. And I think Fred VanVleet probably finds them quite annoying too. And we're going to dive into that reason and the reason why, you know, Fred struggled in particular on offense in this game, and, you know, sort of the grander symptom or the grander issue of the finishing around the rim and the 2-point conversion and the drives and all that stuff that you talked about in your lovely 538 piece coming up in just 1 second. But first, I want to tell everybody about our friends over at Built Bar, making the best tasting protein bar in the world, and it is even better than it used to be. I swear, they sent me a new box like last week, and I have like plowed through them because they're so good. Their new formula is amazing. It's basically like you're eating a chocolate bar, except you don't have to have the guilt of, you know, oh my God, I just ate a chocolate bar at 2 in the afternoon. What is going on with my life? It's actually good for you. It can power your day. It can take you to a workout and you don't have a full stomach or anything like that, and it still gives you the energy you need. They have 18 wonderful flavors, including some real bangers like lemon almond cheesecake. Let me tell you. Lemon almond cheesecake is fantastic. You should just get a whole box of those, or you can get a mixed box because, like I said, 18 amazing flavors, a whole bunch of wide range from fruit flavors to nut flavors, nut-free flavors for those who are allergic. There's no shortage of stuff for you to try out. Bars are covered in 100% chocolate. They're soft and easy to chew, and they are great for the health-conscious person. You can lose or maintain weight while indulging in a delicious treat. Bars are low-calorie, low-sugar, high-protein, high-fiber, and great for keto diets as well. Go to BuiltBar.com and use the promo code LOCKEDON. You'll get 20% off of your next order. Use the promo code LOCKEDON for 20% off at BuiltBar.com. All right, Lewis, we're going to get into your piece here in just 2 seconds, but I just want to give people a heads up. There will be a Saturday podcast this week because I missed yesterday. I had some fire alarm testing going on in my house, and it seemed maybe not the best audio environment to do podcasting in. So there's today's podcast. I'll do a mailbag episode on Friday. I'm going to see if I can get Katie to join that one. And then on Saturday, we will do a breakdown of the Kings game. Whenever I wake up, I usually go to bed at like 4 a.m. on Friday nights. So we will we'll get that podcast out to you as soon as possible on Saturday to talk about that game. But for now, Lewis, let's talk about your piece for 538, where you spoke about the Raptors' drives and how they stink at them. I don't know if it's a surprise to anybody that the numbers are as bad as they are. As you noted, you know, the start of the season, they were basically historically bad on their drives and finishing around the basket. They are slowly ticking up, but not to good levels, just to not historically bad levels. It's just general run-of-the-mill bad. There's lots to get into here. I think we've kind of talked about a lot of the reasons why they struggle in these situations, but what was your impetus for writing about it, Lewis? Because, obviously something must have jarred your brain and said, hell, this is a thing I should dive into for 538. And 538 said, hell yeah, dude, we will pay you so much money to write for us. Please do. So what went into the decision to write about this element of the Raptors offense?
Okay, so no, really good question. So it began with Pascal Siakam because I was thinking, sometimes he seems like he has this huge role in the offense and sometimes he doesn't. How can we differentiate them, in words? Like, what's the difference other than he gets more shots or he makes his threes? And what it really came down to, what it correlated with, was drives. How many times does he drive? And then I looked further and I said, oh, if he converts on his drives, they win like every game. If he makes like, let's say, 4 shots out of drives, the Raptors win like all the time. I don't have numbers to back that up, but it's crazy how much his success on drives correlated. And I was just looking for what might have been the trigger for Siakam's good or bad games. Having found that, I knew what to pitch. I sent it off. Got picked up, which was fantastic. And it remains true. So, I actually wrote my first draft after something like 6 games. And then I had to spend the next 2 weeks, crossing my fingers, hoping that the correlation between those numbers and the Raptors' results remained true. And actually became even more true. Like the relationship between Toronto's drives on the whole and their success became even more reflected in the numbers, especially as their three-point shooting ticked up and their winning did not. And this game became just another example of that. So I have the numbers in front of me. By the way, the Raptors are passing out of a record-breaking number of drives. They're at 48.7, or at least they were going into Tuesday night's games. 48.7% of drives ended in a pass, which is the most of all time in the history of the database.
Sharing is caring, ain't it?
This game was way more. Fred VanVleet passed out of 75% of drives, which he led the league, last year and continues to this year in passing out of drives. Not at 75%. That's even crazy. He drove 16 times, attempted only 2 shots, missed both. Kyle passed out of 78% of drives, drove 9 times. Norman Powell drove 8 times, made only 1 shot. Siakam drove 8 times, made only 1 shot. Like, this is not going to win you a game. No one could put the ball on the floor and finish themselves. And that's just not enough. Because what it comes down to is variance. And this is why the Raptors are able to build leads in like every single game. Because when you rely on a high variance shot, even within the realm of one game, it's going to swing your way, right? If you just shoot 53s, at some point you're going to hit some in a row. So the Raptors have built double digit leads in 6 of their losses. But if you don't have a low variance counter, if you can't just make layups, drive past your guy, put the ball on the rim, then you're never going to hold the lead because that high variance will swing against you. And so even when the Raptors made 22 threes in this one, they punched with the Bucks in the first quarter. When the threes stopped dropping, they had no counter. They had no other offense, no low variance shot to to fall back on it. And that's where the drives come in. And without, you know, Norman Powell, Pascal Siakam, OG Anunoby putting that pressure on the rim, the Raptors just aren't going to return to the levels we saw last year.
Well, well put, man. I think, you know, it's interesting because the Bucks are sort of a team that forces you into extremes. And I mean, really, the game last night is a perfect illustration of the exact issue you were talking about. And I'm glad that we were able to get you on today to talk about that game, because it just, you know, obviously they're not going to pass out of 75% of their drives always, but the Bucks, because they hang back at the rim, because they're so freaking long, and because, you know, to beat them, you kind of need to play a high variance game in a way. I'm not surprised the Raptors put up 55 threes in this game. They shot 40%, which was great, but like you said, you know, you have to get those easy buckets when you can, and they just didn't get any. They only had 16 twos in this game compared to 22 threes. They shot 40% both from the field and from three, which is just not it, man. Like, it's not going to get it done for you. My question to you, Lewis, is do you see any potential solutions on the roster to this problem? I know, you know, looking at Norman Powell, it seems like he's kind of coming back out of his early season funk. He looks really, really good right now. Last night, obviously, was the biggest you know, workhorse on the offense for the team. His drives seemed quite good, and he overall seems to be finishing around the basket with the same sort of composure he did last year when he kind of figured it all out. Even then, though, he only shot 3 of 6 from two yesterday. He was 5 of 7 from three, and a lot of his production came from there. But so there's Norm, you know, is there any other sort of solution on the roster that you see to this problem, or is this something that's going to require, you know, them getting Bradley Beal from the Wizards to fix?
No, I think the roster does have the pieces. I mean, Fred VanVleet, some games, you know, shoots like 6 of 8 at the rim and just is dominant. You know, when that happens, they win. It just doesn't happen often enough. You know, Norman Powell, as you mentioned, and particularly, and this is really important, in games without Siakam, he has been unbelievable driving. So that Kings or the Knicks game, Siakam didn't play, and also those two Indiana games, I think. And Powell was just unbelievable driving the ball in all three games. Siakam has had his stretches as well against the Suns and against the Warriors in particular. He was just unstoppable driving. And the thing is, those three guys, that's where you're going to get it, you know, driving success from. And when I say success, I mean creating for yourself. They all three have created for others at different times, but creating for themselves. And they just haven't put it together in the same game. And I think that is the answer. Like, why can't Norman Powell and Pascal Siakam both, you know, drive and finish like 2 layups each, you know, in the same game? I don't know if that's happened yet this season. And I just don't know why. Like, there's enough touches for both of them. I understand what Nick Nurse said when he said, you know, it's not about starting. It's about Norm getting more touches when, you know, when one of Lowry or Siakam or VanVleet is out because there's more touches to go around, Norm gets the ball more, he feels it, et cetera, et cetera. I get that. But why can't he just do better when Siakam gets those touches? Like, filter some of Lowry's and VanVleet's to him, get those touches to him. You know, he basically runs the offense for stretches when it's a bench rotation, especially alongside Lowry. And like, he and Siakam just need to find ways to do it in the same game. It's as simple as that. And I think Siakam separating his minutes from Baines is a big thing.
Yep.
Powell seems to be playing great alongside Baines because he's a little bit faster second step, especially than Siakam. So we can get to the rim before that sort of clog gets in there. But I mean, I know it's simplistic, but just do better kind of is some of the answer. And they can, like last year, they were great in a million games together. So just, I mean, it has to start happening, right?
Yeah, you know, I'm with you. I think there's some extra finishing around the rim to be mined here. I don't think they're ever going to be amazing at it. You know, this is probably going to cap out around middle of the league. But if they can do that and pair with their defense and their three-point shooting, then you kind of have a winning formula there. you know, Fred, shout out to Joe Wolfon because it stuck in my head ever since he tweeted it. But Fred is both a bad finisher and the best finisher. And he, you know, I think there's been serious growth in terms of his finishing around the basket this season. Obviously, the Bucks proposed a particularly difficult matchup, and I'm not surprised he was as poor as he was last night on the offensive end. And look, he, you know, the passing ended up turning into a lot of assists for him last night. So good for him, I guess. But, you know, I think he's gotten better there. I think Kyle, when he wants to, and obviously I think there's probably some pacing going on here. He had the toe thing. You know, he's 34. It's the start of the season. Maybe he's just not fully exerting himself on every possession the way he typically would. But I think when he wants to score around the basket, he can, as we saw in the playoffs last year. Yep. It was just like, okay, Daniel Theis, I'm going to destroy you and score, and there's nothing you can do about it. I think having Baines look better. We saw him throw down a couple dunks on the pick and roll last night. I mean, if he can do that a couple times a game, that's a couple easy two-point buckets that they just weren't getting before.
Yep.
And I think, you know, Siakam as well, using him on the roll more often, using Boucher on the roll more often as opposed to making him more of a popper. I think there are some other routes there too. We'll have to figure it out, man. And hopefully this run of little easy games against not very good teams and teams with bad defenses can kind of help them iron some things out after a stretch of some very difficult games against some annoyingly good teams with insanely good defenses and all that. But, you know, I think the overall takeaway from this game and everything is that it's not as bad as this game maybe makes it seem and the record maybe makes it seem. So
I just thought of a solution. I mean, it's not...
Yeah.
It's not real. It's a bad solution. I'm just going to preface by saying that. But if the Raptors were to start Norman Powell and put Siakam on the bench, that solves a ton of their problems. Like, obviously, you can't do that, and it's bad to do that. This is a bad solution. But Powell would be getting those touches. He'd be getting a lot of looks. And he is, you know, I think the team's second best guy at putting that sort of vertical pressure on the rim. You separate Siakam and Baines minutes almost entirely. So Siakam's playing with an open floor. Siakam gets to play a ton more alongside the shooters coming off the bench. He'll get more touches, which is actually something that, as we discussed in the beginning of the podcast, something that's been a problem for him. Seems like it could solve some of the, you know, the specific issues obviously is impossible. Toronto just has a starting lineup issue right now. And until, as you said, they get a center who can just do more stuff, I think that's going to be an issue going forward.
Fair enough. Also, should be noted, OG Anunoby, probably a pretty good option on like the dive and stuff like that. His drives are becoming more powerful and mean and forceful too. So maybe there's some growth potential there as well.
And a great role man.
Quite a bit in this game.
A great screener and role man. I mean, when he's in, you use him in the pick and roll too, alongside Siakam.
Totally. That is going to do it for today's show. We've got a little bit long here, but that's okay because there's a lot to dive into. And Lewis, you're the freaking best, and I love talking to you, and I could do it all day. Thanks for coming on the show, man. Where can people check out your work?
Yeah, I'm at Twitter, just my name, LUSZATZMAN, at Lewis Atzman. Everything I post goes up there. Also at Raptors Republic, that's where I post most days. It's fun, man. It's a weird season, which makes for fun writing.
And of course, 538 didn't even plug your newest byline, man.
We've
just set you
about
up.
It
I'm
enough.
Serving you up the softball. Yeah, we could do it again. You're at 538. It's awesome, man. Everyone go read the 538 piece from Lewis. Keep an eye out, hopefully, for more work from him there. And we'll have you back again soon, buddy, if you are still willing to punch down and hang out with us, us normies, once you've reached writing fame. For me, you can find me on Twitter at WoodleySean. You can subscribe to, rate, and review, all that good stuff. You know, we are having a good time on the Locked On Network right now. We got lots of wonderful shows for you to investigate, support, all of that good stuff. So thank you in advance for taking the time. And that will do it. We are... going to wrap it there. We'll be back again for a mailbag podcast on Friday. Get your questions in, and we'll talk to you then with another episode of Locked On Raptors.